Let's turn this morning to 1 Peter chapter 1. I'm feeling a little bit of the pressure this morning as I get up here. You know, we've been in a full service. Lots has happened. And I want to continue what has happened, but also recognize that people have a limited amount of attention span. And so I'm going to start talking for a while, and I recognize how that can be difficult for some of us. And then I know it's getting warm in here, right? So the fans are already coming out at 10:30. Thank you, whoever opened the doors back there. Thanks for doing that. And then I've heard some rumbling of a soccer game going on, which already started. And I want to thank those who are, you know, eager to get to the soccer game for the sacrifice they're making right now to be here with us. So all kinds of pressures on me this morning, and I'm going to do my best. We're in a sermon series called The Trouble with Christianity. I don't think Christianity is trouble, but some people see Christianity as trouble. Right? They're troubled by it. And so we're trying to engage with the questions that some people have that trouble them about God or Jesus or the church. This morning, the question we're looking at is, why is the church so full of hypocrites? If I can ask it one more time a little differently, but why is this church so full of hypocrites? Let me invite Jimmy to come up. If you'd come, Jimmy, bring us the word this morning, read it to us. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13, to chapter 2, verse 3. Right on.
Therefore, with minds that are alert and fully sober, set your hope on the grace to be brought to you when Jesus Christ is revealed at his coming. As obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance, but just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, "Be holy, because I am holy." Since you call on fathers who judge each person's work impartially, live out your life as foreigners here in reverent fear. For you know that it is not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. He was chosen before the creation of the world, but was revealed in these last times for your sake. Through him you believe in God, who raised him from the dead and glorified him, and so your faith and hope are in God. Now that you have purified yourselves by obeying the truth, so that you have sincere love for each other, love one another deeply from the heart. For you have been born again, not of perishable seed, but of imperishable, through the living and the enduring word of God. For all people like grass, and all their glory is like flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of the Lord endures forever. And this is the word that was preached to you. Therefore, rid yourselves of all malice and all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk, so that by it you may grow in your salvation. Now that you have tasted that the Lord is good. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. So why is the church so full of hypocrites? Which, for me, when I hear that question, it's a question, but also implied in the question is a critique of the church, and then almost an argument against participating in a church. Because people in church, in Christians are meant to be people who have certain moral standards, and then we find out that at least some of them don't meet those high moral standards. And so why would anybody want to be part of a church community? And those are good questions. Maybe we should just talk about the word hypocrite. For many people, hypocrite means claiming to have moral standards to which one's actions do not conform, which is a good popular understanding of hypocrisy. In the ancient Greek culture, hypocrites were literally actors. That's where the word comes from. Hypocrite means something like judging or pronouncing under. And so actors were people who made pronouncements. They were, in some sense, making judgments. They were acting underneath this mask. And so the word hypocrite was literally actor, but then people used the word to talk about others who in their lives were acting. You know, their mask said, we should love other people. But you take the mask off and you realize that they weren't very loving in their actions or their words in their lives. Or the mask might say, I'm a pretty good person. But when you looked into their lives, you realized they weren't very good. They might say, we shouldn't be rude to other people. But then when you take off the mask, you would hear or you would see all kinds of rudeness. Now, we have to be a little careful this morning. Hypocrisy is not simply doing wrong things. Right? Everybody does wrong things. Hypocrisy has in it a kind of willing deceit at some level. The hypocrite is the person who sees some inconsistency in their life, but they don't acknowledge it, they don't confess it, they even try and hide it. Hypocrites are typically people who say a lot about other people, how other people should act, but say very little about where they're not living up to the standards that they have. Hypocrites typically are people who are always right, and other people are always wrong. And for me, very interesting, in all the uses of the word hypocrites or hypocrites in the Bible, most of them come from the lips of Jesus. And who is he typically, when he names or when he's pointing at people, who is he almost always pointing at? Pharisees, Sadducees, and all those other E's. But I want to remind us, although some of us think, oh, Pharisees, bad people. For people in the first century, Pharisees were the good people. They were the good guys. They were the religious leaders. They were the people trying to hold the community together. They were really concerned about how the community was doing, especially how they were behaving. And that should be instructive to us. Although anyone can be a hypocrite, there's a certain kind of hypocrisy that happens to religious people. Because sometimes religious people are so focused on the outside. How do I look? Am I acting the right way? Is anybody watching? I know they're watching me. We're so focused on the outside that there's hardly any focus on what's happening on the inside. So Jesus says, and I'm just going to jump to Matthew 23:25. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites, you two-faced or mask and real life kind of people. You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you are full of greed and self-indulgence. So not just you're an actor, not just you're living a double life, not just you're deceiving people in some way, but you're all concerned about the outside, so concerned about the externals that you're not even thinking about what's happening on the inside, the heart or the will or the motives of your life. And oftentimes, hypocrites either don't see that, so they don't see that distinction, or they don't want to see that distinction. So how are we going to respond to people who say the church is, or why is the church so full of hypocrites? Well, we could say, that ain't us, right? That ain't us. Or we could say something like, how dare you talk about the church like that? Because that ain't us. And if it's them, it ain't me. So why don't you start a church with me? With people who are not hypocrites. And I would encourage us not to go down the road of denial. We could say, like I hear some people say, don't be a hypocrite, practice what you preach, which sounds like good advice, but if we start there, all the onus is on me and on us to rid the church of hypocrisy. So if we try harder, if we work more, maybe we can rid our lives of hypocrisy. And I want to suggest, instead of denying hypocrisy or trying to get people just try harder not to be hypocrites, I want to suggest our first move, and this is our typical first move, is to point people to Jesus, who is the only one I know of who is not full of hypocrisy. A person full of truth, no deceit, genuine, authentic. He practiced what he preached. So when Jesus said, love your enemies, he wasn't just talking to other people and then living a double life, like I just can't stand my enemies. He was a person who said, love your enemies, and then showed us what it means to love those who insult us and abuse us. When he said, serve others, he literally served them by washing feet and suffering and dying for the sins of the world. So what Jesus claims to be, he is. What Jesus calls others to do, he himself does. And in a few moments, I want to call us, as our passage does this morning, I want to say to move through hypocrisy toward holiness. And when we think about the idea of holiness in the Bible, especially the Old Testament, if you read some of that language in the Old Testament, there's holiness, this kind of realm of holiness, and then there's this realm of unholiness. And in the Old Testament, we had to keep those apart, because if holiness and unholiness touch, if you were to touch a dead person or an unclean person, what happens? You become unclean. So we have to keep those separated. But when Jesus comes along, who is called in the New Testament the Holy One of God, when he touches unclean people, unholy people, it's not their unholiness that covers him, rather his holiness covers them. So I was reading this past week, Jesus' contact with the leper or the bleeding woman or a dead boy should have made him unclean by the Old Testament understanding. But instead, as he reaches out to heal them or touch them, his holiness and purity transfers to them, healing and restoring their bodies. So he is the true Holy One, the true genuine one, the one in whom there is no deceit or hypocrisy, and he is all those things for the sake of others, making them alive and whole and healed and holy. And as we point people to Jesus, I'm going to suggest this morning that we also, as we're able to, say something like this, hello, hello, my name is hypocrite. Now I know some of you, Pastor Yo, no, no, no. Pastor Yo, no, no, no. We dare not do that. We dare not confess that. We dare not say that. But I am convinced more and more this is the path of the Christian life. To be honest, to acknowledge, to confess. In general, these days, I think when people say the church is full of hypocrites, we should say, you're right. You're right. It's not just the church, but certainly you're right about the church. Things are not always so rosy and great in the church and also in my life. And as we do that, as we make that confession, I hope some people will hear a call into the power, the healing power of confession. Not just confession for the sake of confession, as sometimes we see, but confession for the sake of healing. Confession for the sake of drawing nearer to God. So pointing people to Jesus and confessing where it's necessary in our lives, hypocrisy, and then also turning toward holiness. As Jimmy read for us this morning from 1 Peter chapter 1, just as he who called you is holy, So be holy in all you do, for it's written, be holy because I, God, is holy. And if I'm not a betting person typically, but if I were to bet this morning, I would bet that most of us, when we hear the word holy or holiness, we think, and it could be wrong for you, but I think a lot of people, here's the list. He's going to come out with a list. God's going to come out with a list. Or some of you are saying, just give me the list. Tell me what to do and not to do. Or holiness gets connected with stuffy people, stuffy church people, some of whom are not very fun and joyful, too serious, and way too concerned about what others are doing. Right? That's, I think, for some people, this is what holiness means. And this past week, I came across what I consider to be a great, at least a starting definition of holiness, where somebody, it was an online Bible study on this theme. They were trying to recover the biblical idea of holiness. This person said, which includes private morality, what I'm doing. But then they said this line, the very life of God in us. The very life of God in us, which is exactly what we sang last week Sunday, if you were here, we sang this song, I love this song, Lord, I need you. I hope we can sing that song with our hearts. This is just a confession of the Christian life. I need you, Lord. And one line in that song is, holiness is Christ in me. For me, that becomes a way of thinking about what the Bible calls us to when it calls us to be holy. It's the very life of God coming to live in us individually, but also in us as a community. It's the very values of heaven. It's this concept. I'm so thankful. I think it's N.T. Wright kind of showed this to me. The Bible is all about heaven and earth coming together. The values of heaven invading the earth. And when we're called to be holy, it's the values of heaven coming to dwell in this life. My mind, my heart, my body, my motives. And there's always some rub when that happens. Always some rub. There's always things churning in me if I'm asking or wanting the values of heaven to come into my heart. And I heard that this past week as I was listening to a podcast. The person on the podcast was talking about, they were responding to a question somebody had. And because it's Father's Day, I think it's a good question for us to be thinking about. Basically, the person was wondering, what happens, or was trying to sort of think about, my spouse has sinned against me. My spouse has sinned against me, and I'm wondering about my response to them after they sinned against me. Basically. So this person said the battle for being the most loving person that you can be as God portrays and defines holiness, and then my ears, you know, holiness in the Bible, consists more than I ever thought it would in the struggle to avoid sinning in response to being sinned against. Now I love that, that highlighted part there, that holiness, as God defines it in the Bible, is to be the most loving person I can be. So I want to connect holiness with love and life and grace and hope and all kinds of words like that. And then he says, one of the greatest battles for holiness and love in Christian marriage, but really any relationship, the next slide, is the battle to avoid my sin in response to my spouse's sin, which I feel against me. Now, I don't know if it hits you like it hit me. But again, I too think holiness is all exterior, all exterior. Am I living a holy life? Which is all importance. But this person was saying, in his understanding, his experience of marriage, sometimes when his spouse sinned against him, his response was sin. Right? And so often, this is where hypocrisy so often happens to us. They said something to me. And so I get to say something to them, right? I'm justified. They deserve it. And this is where hypocrisy gets so, for religious people, even for Christians, It gets so deceptive because I think I'm doing the right thing by responding the way I am to them. But if I really check what's going on here, I've just justified my sin. I've just justified hurting or harming someone. And maybe they weren't even intending to harm me, but my response was so strong. And when I heard that, I thought, man, that's good for me to hear. Maybe good for some of us to hear. The holiness God calls us to requires a lot of self-awareness. Not always thinking about ourselves, but aware. What's happening? What's happening? Why am I doing that? Why am I saying that? Why am I feeling that? What's happening in my insides that's causing this? And I think some of us, when we reflect on that, we're going to say, there is some hypocrisy. I called that sin. I'm not calling my response sin. This morning, I was challenged a little bit by some of the men in the seniors group this past Tuesday. I was talking with them, and we were having quite a vigorous conversation about my preaching. I think at the end, we were all on the same page. I think. But what I heard from them was, there's a time to challenge people. There's a time to even provoke people. There's a time, Pastor Yo, to call people to response. And maybe even some kind of altar call. So I want to do some of that this morning. I hope I've challenged us a little bit and maybe even provoked us a little bit. I do want to call us to respond this morning. And it's not your typical altar call, but I do want us to do something this morning in a few moments. I want to pray for hypocrites this morning. Someone said that the prayer that God will not answer, there's no guarantee God will answer it, is the prayer, Father, help that person see their hypocrisy. There's no guarantee God's going to answer that prayer. But the prayer with almost a guaranteed answer is, Father, I'm a hypocrite. More than I know, please help me see myself rightly and help me to change. So this morning, I want to pray for all of us who say, yeah, there are moments where I too feel the power of hypocrisy on me. And what I want to do this morning is I'm going to pray, then we're going to have the blessing, and then we're going to have our final song. So Dale, you can come on up right now if you're able to. I'm going to invite you, if this prayer is touching you at all, or if this morning you're saying, yeah, I think he's got something this morning, I feel some, you know, I'm also guilty of hypocrisy, you know, I'm going to invite you to do something. So maybe it's just, maybe you're going to sit with your eyes open. That's going to be your kind of physical response. I usually close my eyes this morning, Lord, I'm opening my eyes. Or I'm just going to put my thumbs up where I'm sitting. Or I'm going to stand, or I'm going to kneel. But some, it could be very, very subtle what you're doing, but some indication, if someone were watching you really closely, say, oh, they're giving me some indication that this prayer is also for them.